All right, welcome there to Building Microservices Applications on the Azure Service Fabric. I will be your host for this course. My name is Jeffrey Richter. I'm a Microsoft software engineer. I'm also a co-founder of a company called Wintellect, which does training and consulting services. But most people are familiar with me from the various books that I've authored over the past 20 or so years. I put my three most recent book covers up here on the slide where you can see them. And if you want to get in touch with me, I put my email down below. And you can also reach out to me on LinkedIn if you'd like. And there's my Twitter handle there as well. All right, so without any further ado, let's just get right into talking about Service Fabric. Let's start in the middle on this slide. Service Fabric is Microsoft's microservices platform. And as you would expect with any microservices platform, you would expect certain distributed systems features, things like lifecycle management, independent scaling of your services, rolling upgrades of your applications, always-on availability, a very resource-efficient system. And you'd like to be able to support stateless and also stateful services running within your cluster of nodes. One of the great things about Service Fabric is that it's Windows components, and actually we'll also be shipping Linux components as well, that can run on any Windows or Linux machine. All you have to do is install those components on those machines, and then Service Fabric is there, and the different nodes can communicate with each other. As you can see from the slide, Service Fabric can be installed in public clouds, and certainly it gets first-class support when running inside Microsoft Azure. But it could also be installed in other public clouds too, like Amazon or anywhere where Windows or Linux machines run. You can install Service Fabric in your on-premises private clouds as well. And for the developer, there's a Service Fabric SDK. When you install that on your computer, you are installing the exact same Service Fabric bits onto your own machine. And this gives you a very interactive, high-fidelity developer experience when running on your own computer. You can simply, if you're using Visual Studio, hit F5 and then just deploy your app into the cluster that's running on your local machine. You can set breakpoints and have the familiar Visual Studio experience that you've come accustomed to over the years. At the top of the slide, I talk about how you can build applications using many languages, frameworks, and runtimes. With Service Fabric, you can use all kinds of languages that you are familiar with, like Node or Java and .NET, and then you can just package these things up and then use Service Fabric to go and deploy your services onto a bunch of different nodes running within the cluster. And we are hoping that other people will create third-party components as well. Programming languages as well, third-party programming languages, and more things will become available. And I'll talk more about this as we go through the course. Another important thing to realize about Service Fabric is that it is free. There's no charge for the Service Fabric components themselves. Now, if you are running Service Fabric inside an Azure data center, you are being billed for the virtual machine hours that you are using, but there's no additional charge for the Service Fabric components. If you're familiar with Azure Cloud Services, Microsoft over the years has gotten a lot of feedback from that and has tried to address that feedback when building Azure Service Fabric. If you look at the left hand of my slide, this shows an Azure Cloud Service which has its web and worker roles. And the typically way that you build a service this way is that you have these roles and you have different instances of these roles, and each role instance has to run in its own virtual machine. That's what this picture on the left is showing. It's showing each rectangle as being a virtual machine, and the orange rectangles are instances of one role, the yellow rectangles are instances of another role, the green is instance of another role, and so on. And one of the things that customers didn't like about this was that you're paying for these virtual machine instances by the hour. Even if the instances are not being used heavily, that is, the CPU usage is low, you're still being billed hourly for them. And so customers felt that they were spending a lot of money and not getting as much value. With Azure Service Fabric, the architecture is very different. You stand up a set of nodes inside the data center, and then each of those nodes can run multiple instances of different roles within the single node. So you can see each rectangle here on the right has a bunch of different colored hexagons in it, where each hexagon color represents a different role instance. And with this model, you can be purchasing by the hour a lot fewer virtual machines, which of course ultimately ends up saving you a lot of money. And then you can pack a bunch of different service instances on the fewer virtual machines that you have. So Service Fabric gives you a system that is much more resource efficient. Another thing that we've gotten feedback with over the years with cloud services is the slow time it takes to go and scale up or scale down your service instances. But with Azure Service Fabric, you can literally tell it that you wish to scale up from, let's say, 10 instances to 50 instances, and within just a couple of seconds, that scaling will occur. And you can scale down just as quick. I also mentioned earlier about the debugging experience. With cloud services, there was an emulator that developers would install on their machine to give them a debugging experience. And then, but the emulator was not 100% fidelity with what was happening in the cloud. But with Service Fabric, as I mentioned, it's the exact same bits that are in the cloud as are on your developer machine. So you have a much higher fidelity developer experience there. And I will be talking more about that as we go through this section. So now let me give you some familiarity with some terminology and concepts. What I show on this slide here is a Service Fabric cluster that we're going to create, and it's going to consist of 5 nodes. The rectangle on the right represents a data center. This could be an Azure data center, an Amazon data center, or it can be your own-premises data center. Now, within this data center, you first provision some number of pieces of hardware. These can be PCs, as I show here, or they could be virtual machines. Usually, if you're running inside a data center like Amazon or Azure, these will be virtual machines. And what I'm showing here is just 5 of these. We call these nodes. But as I mentioned on the bottom left corner of the slide, Service Fabric can support clusters that have many thousands of nodes in them. I'm only showing 5 here. Now, on each of these PCs or virtual machines, you have an operating system installed. And again, that can be either Windows or Linux. Those are the 2 operating systems that Service Fabric supports. So let's go and install the Service Fabric components on each of those machines, as depicted here on the slide. So now that we have Service Fabric installed on each of these, the Service Fabric components have to be able to communicate with them. So we end up deploying to each of these machines what's called a cluster manifest. And the cluster manifest is a file that basically has in it the IP addresses of all the machines that make up the cluster. And this is a dynamic information. That is, you can add more machines to the cluster dynamically, and you can also remove machines from the cluster dynamically as well. Once you've deployed the cluster manifest to the machines, that lets the machines communicate with each other. And now they can start talking to each other. At this point, we have what we would call the cluster, right? So the cluster is a bunch of machines that have Service Fabric components installed on them, and those components know the IP addresses of the other machines so that they can all communicate together. This is what we refer to as the Service Fabric cluster. All right, so now, you would typically put a load balancer in front of these. Now, Service Fabric itself does not come with a load balancer, and it does not know anything about a load balancer. So if you desire a load balancer, you need to provide one yourself. Now, if you're deploying this within Azure, Azure is going to provide the load balancer for you. But if you're doing it in an on-premises configuration, then you will have to provide the load balancer yourself if you desire one. Now, the Earth here, that represents the outside world, or the requests that are coming in over the internet. And what you, as a software developer, would do is you would go and create your code. And your code could consist of an executable and a bunch of dynamic link libraries and any other asset files or dependencies that your service needs to be running. Then you would take your code and all the dependency files, and you would upload them into the cluster. That usually happens by making a request to the cluster on port 19,080, which is our default port that the cluster Service Fabric components are listening on within the cluster. That's for HTTP requests. We also listen on port 19,000 for TCP requests, and then we give you PowerShell commands and other ways for you to do communication from your machine in your office up to a Service Fabric component running in a cluster. So now you're going to upload your code through the load balancer. The load balancer is going to select one of the nodes within the cluster. In my case here, it chose node number 1. And it's going to upload the code into the Service Fabric component. At that point, the Service Fabric component will then copy your code to all the nodes within the cluster. So as you can see here, all 5 nodes has your code and any other resources installed on all of those machines. Now, what I do show here is a bit of an oversimplification. Service Fabric does not just take all your code that you send to it and put it on every node within the cluster. There's actually more control that you have over doing this, and I'll go into that control as we continue the discussion. Now that the code has been deployed within the cluster, if we go back to the slide, then customer or client requests can now come in, and usually these come in on port 80 for HTTP traffic or port 443 for SSL traffic or any ports that you desire. And those requests can come in from your customers, again, through the load balancer. The load balancer selects one of the machines in the cluster. In this case, it chose machine number 5. And now that request is coming into your code that's running on that node instance. Your code can now do whatever processing it desires. Typically, it returns HTML or XML or JSON, and then that response goes back to the client, and now that's how your code is up and running within the cluster. Now, within the nodes in the cluster, Service Fabric includes several services that are part of Service Fabric, and these are going to be running within the nodes of your cluster. And it's useful that you understand these because, first of all, it gives you some insight as to how Service Fabric works internally. And also, if any of these things fail, then you'll know what kind of behavior to expect from the cluster. And then, of course, any failures you find, you should report to the Service Fabric team so we can go and fix our bugs. So let's just walk through the various system services that you should expect to find. There is the cluster manager service. This runs on all the nodes of the cluster, and it's responsible for doing cluster management. It is the component that is listening on all the nodes for RESTful HTTP traffic, and we default it to listening on port 19,080. But you can change this port if you desire by way of the cluster manifest. Also, we have PowerShell commands, and we have a .NET Fabric client class that can be used to automate or script commands coming into the cluster. And that listens, the cluster is listening for TCP traffic here on port 19,000. Again, that is configurable using the cluster manifest. We have a failover manager service, and its responsibility is to detect when new nodes enter the cluster or if nodes fail or are taken down within the cluster. And when it sees this, it goes and rebalances the instance services within the cluster. For example, if a node goes down, the failover manager knows what service instances were running on that node, and then it will move those instances or create them on other nodes within the cluster so that your services are always running and you get high availability. The naming service is a service that maps your service instances to their endpoints. When a service comes up within the cluster, it can publish an endpoint or multiple endpoints where it can be listening for different kinds of traffic, UDP, TCP, HTTP, and so on. And then other services running within the cluster, they might want to go and talk to that service. So they can go and query the naming service and say, hey, I'm looking for service foo and endpoint bar. Go and get that endpoint, and then that service can now talk to that foo service on its bar endpoint using that endpoint. If the Service Fabric starts moving instances around within the cluster, then the naming service is kept up to date with the new endpoints. And so your client services can always, if communication fails, go back to the naming service, query the latest endpoint information, and then start talking with the service again. The fault analysis service, that allows you to inject faults to test your service. Service Fabric ships with this fault analysis mechanism that allows you to turn on like a chaos monkey, for example, that can go and kill services or kill nodes and bring them back up and shift services around within the cluster so that you can see how well your services are handling these kinds of failures and if you've written your code robust enough to be able to deal with this in an effective way to keep your service running properly. The image store service contains your application packages. I mentioned on the previous slide that you, the software developer, would create your code that has XEs and DLLs and other dependency files. Those files, when you upload them into the cluster, they actually get uploaded into what we call the image store service. And then they just sit there as a store, it's the image store. And then later you can decide, now I want to run an instance of this service. And when you do that, Service Fabric will go into the image store, grab the executable DLL files and so on, copy them on the proper nodes, and then get your service up and running at that time. And I'll be talking more about the image store as we continue this discussion. By the way, the image store service does not exist on OneBox by default. OneBox is the word that we use for when you install Service Fabric on your local machine as a developer testing environment. But OneBox will exist in all the production environments. Not OneBox, the image store will exist in all the production environments. And then final service is the upgrade service. The upgrade service exists only when you're running in a hosted Azure environment. And what it's responsible for is for upgrading the Service Fabric components that are installed on each of the nodes. So on the Service Fabric team, we will periodically go and upgrade various components, and then we will send up the upgrades to your nodes that are running in production. Again, that only exists when you're in Azure, and this gives you our platform as a service offering. All right, so now the last slide of this section is about node processes. And this just gives you, again, as a developer, a little bit more insight as to how Service Fabric actually works. And this is useful for debugging things when things are not working properly, or this is what you can expect to see if you have a remote desktop into a node that's part of a cluster. What I show on this slide is a single personal computer or virtual machine, and then you've installed the Service Fabric components into this PC or VM. When you install the Service Fabric components, there's a file called fabrichost.exe. This is a Windows NT service that is set to auto start at boot. So if whenever your node reboots itself for whatever reason, then Windows will automatically restart fabrichost.exe. And this is what causes the Service Fabric component on that machine to be restarted with every reboot of the machine. The fabrichost.exe, it goes and spawns fabrichost.exe, which is a component responsible for doing inter-node communication. And it also spawns fabrichgateway.exe, which is for the basically intra-node or cluster communication. And then these two components, fabrichxe and fabrichgateway, they make up the node itself. And then, of course, another thing that will be part of the node is your application services. This is your ASP.NET app or some other executable in DLLs, and then your app can expose whatever additional endpoints it desires. And these are the three pieces here that make up a node. And usually, like 99.9% of the time, there's a one-to-one relationship between a node and a PC or virtual machine. However, in the one-box scenario, which the developer has when they're doing testing on their local machine, we can actually stand up multiple nodes on the single PC or VM. And by default, OneBox will go and configure 5 nodes. So in the developer experience, when you're working with Visual Studio and you're running things locally on your OneBox, right? Well, that's where we got the name from, you'll still have only one fabrichost.exe, but if you have 5 nodes, you'll have 5 instances of fabric.exe, 5 instances of fabricgateway.exe, and so on. And you'll be able to see all of this in tools and utilities like Task Manager. All right, in the next video, I will be walking you through a demo showing you Service Fabric Explorer, which is a tool that we have, and it'll be showing you what happens inside of a cluster.